at a certain point, you get sick and tired of being sick and tired, right? And you have to look back at your past failures and successes, learn from them. So what is your life telling me? What is your experience telling you thus far? It's never telling you that you're not good enough. It's never telling you that you shouldn't dream big enough. These are not things that life or God through life is going to tell you. These are things that fear is going to tell you. But it might tell you, oh, you're better at this than you are at this. Or when you do it this way, you come alive. So pay attention to those kinds of signposts along the way.
Welcome to Mimika TV. I'm your host, Mimika Cooney. Today, I'm so excited to introduce a guest to you who I have been following, can kind of call me a little fangirl, reading all the books and the courses that there are out there. And I know you are going to love his content just as much as I do. I'm going to introduce you today to Jeff Goins. Now, he is a writer, speaker, and entrepreneur. He's a best-selling author of 5 books, including The Art of Work and Real Artists Don't Starve. His award-winning blog, goinswriter.com, is visited by millions of people every year. Through his online courses, events, and coaching programs, he helps thousands of writers succeed every year. So I'm so excited to have you on the show, Jeff. Welcome.
Hey, Mimika, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
I was saying just before we recorded, I feel like I know you already because I've heard your voice all my my courses. And then it's like I've been going through all the content. And it's always great to be able to learn from someone like you who's so experienced, who's sort of kind of been there, done it, who comes from an artist's like heart, because we know as writers, right, we have art on the heart and we want to figure out how we can put our art, our story, our ideas, whether even entrepreneurs or artists, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, I agree.
So exactly. So we have got some great things I'd love to cover now, especially regarding my audience I know who are listening. Several of them have reached out to me and said, you know, I'd love to share my story. I don't know how, I don't feel like, you know, I love writing, but I don't feel like I'm a writer. Having gone through this process, what can we sort of dive into in order to help our audience do sort of pull in those pieces? So I want to be able to cover that. But before that, can you give our audience just a little bit of a backstory, like where Jeff was 20 years ago, how you got started doing all of this?
20 years ago, I was 16 years old, and I was learning how to play guitar in the basement of my parents' home. When I would get in trouble, my dad would ground me, and he would say, "You can't listen to any music other than the music that you can make." And he gave me a guitar and taught me some chords, so I couldn't listen to my stereo. I couldn't talk to my friends when I was grounded, but I could play guitar. And so because of those constraints, I was forced to be creative, which was something that I had always done through a variety of outlets, writing, performance, you know, acting, music and drawing and art and all kinds of things. And so, 20 years ago, I was writing sad songs about girls that wouldn't go out with me in the basement of my parents' home, which is where my room was. They didn't lock me in the basement. And then...
So you were kept under lock and key, just a little bit
right,
of teenage
right.
angst.
Yes, I wasn't tied up in the cellar or something. And then from there to here, you know, I really thought that music was going to be what I did. I went to college, graduated college, joined a band, toured North America for a year, had a short stint in Taiwan, did some touring in Canada as well. And during that year of playing 5 to 10 shows a week, being on the road, living the life of a professional musician, I made about $7,000 that year in personal income. And it was just a lot of driving and casseroles and sleeping on people's couches and a little bit of playing music. And I realized it wasn't what I wanted to do. It was a nice idea, but in reality, the job of being a musician was not necessarily something that I wanted to do. And I remember sitting around with a group of musicians, and one of them said, "Well, if I couldn't play music, I don't know what I'd do." And I literally thought, well, I would just do something else. And I thought, that's probably a good sign that this isn't like my calling, the thing that I'm meant to do with my life. And so I eventually quit the band. I didn't know what I was going to do next. I moved to Nashville, and I, at the time, was blogging. I was writing on the side, and actually once a week I would write a blog post based on whatever we did during that year traveling with the band. So every week I'd write a blog post, and all of our friends and fans and family members would like, they would say, "Oh, like, I can't wait for you to write a book, you know, based on all these travels and stuff." And that was sort of the first inkling to me that maybe writing was something that I might be doing more of. And so I ended up getting hired as a writer for a nonprofit organization. I became the marketing director there. I learned a lot about marketing through firsthand experience. I knew nothing about marketing, but I learned through that job and through the writings of Seth Godin, a well-known and influential marketer and blogger, that writing is just about helping ideas spread. And I was like, well, I could do that. And over the years of telling other people's stories and promoting other people's messages as a marketer, I realized like I had something to say and I had a message that I wanted to share. And so after 9 failed attempts at starting a blog and trying to grow some sort of online presence, the 10th time was a charm. And I launched the blog that I have today, grew an audience, started publishing books, started speaking and selling online courses, eventually was able to replace my income and then multiply it many times over, quit my job. And I've been doing that ever since 2012.
Wow. So that's what I love about the journey is that you didn't just overnight arrive and you have millions and millions of followers, right? I would love to dig into a little bit about those 10 failures, because I know a lot of my listeners are like, well, wouldn't it be nice if I got this huge contract overnight, I'd be this huge, amazing success in New York, the best time, best-selling author, and everyone thinks that's just so fancy, but we don't realize about the time in between, right?
Right.
So what encouragement or what tips could you offer the audience about those who perhaps felt like they were, you know, 20-year-old Jeff in their basement, like something's got to give, and kind of thinking, well, maybe there's something I have to say. Like, what advice would you give them in order to sort of get that out and start doing that?
Well, you know, there's that whole concept of the iceberg principle, that whatever you see on the surface, there's a whole lot more underneath. And so anytime you see some person's success, just understand that there's a lot of work that went behind that they might not even be aware of. I've become very skeptical and suspicious of people's stories, because anytime a person succeeds, they kind of go back and clean up their past a little bit. It's like when somebody runs for political office.
It's like, oh, I never expunged.
I never did that in college. Well, and we all just naturally do that. It's called the narrative bias. We naturally do that as human beings, where we go, well, here I am. So how did I get here? Well, I did this and I did this and I did this. And if you do this and this and this, it'll get you here too. When in reality, when you're experiencing life, it never feels that linear, right? What is that Nietzsche quote that we understand life backwards, but we can only live life forward. So we're always kind of making our way through the mystery. And so if you're feeling like I'm not where I want to be, welcome to being human, right? You're never quite there. There is no there, as Gertrude Stein once said. And so there's something really important about being able to enjoy the journey wherever you are. I know it feels sort of disingenuous to say that, but it took me a long time of going, well, I want to go there. And then I get there and I go, well, I want to go there. And I get there and I want to go there. And I realize like, oh, I never get there because I'm always here. And so I have a decision. Am I going to keep saying, well, I'll be happy when I get there? Or can I just enjoy the ride? Doesn't mean that you don't have goals and that you don't strive for things, but can I learn to be okay with where I'm at? And it actually took me getting some things that I thought I wanted, that I thought would make me happy, to realize that this, it really is about the journey. That's the whole life experience. But you know, the other thing that I think is helpful is when you are in the middle of a struggle, of a trial, of things not working, that failure always has something to teach you, right? And so there were 9 failed blogs and then 1 successful one. And the 9 failed blogs all taught me something different, but they also all taught me the same thing. And one of the things that they taught me that I finally learned on the 10th attempt was that it's not about a great idea. It's about perseverance, and that if I persevere long enough and hard enough, I will find a great idea. I will find a way to connect something that I have to offer with an audience. And so I realized the one thing that I was doing that I had in common with all these 9 failures was that I kept quitting. I would start something, it wouldn't work, I'd get bored, I'd quit. I'd start something, it wouldn't work, I'd get bored, I'd quit. I'd start something, it'd work a little bit, I'd get bored, I'd quit. What if I just didn't quit? And so at a certain point, you get sick and tired of being sick and tired, right? And you have to look back at your past failures and successes, learn from them, Parker Palmer says, before I can tell my life what I want to do with it, I need to listen to my life telling me who I am. So what is your life telling me? What is your experience telling you thus far? It's never telling you that you're not good enough. It's never telling you that you shouldn't dream big enough. These are not things that life or God through life is going to tell you. These are things that fear is going to tell you, right? But it might tell you, oh, you're better at this than you are at this. Or when you do it this way, you come alive. So pay attention to those kinds of signposts along the way. For me, it was listening to my failure, not repeating some of the mistakes of the past, enjoying the journey, and then finally getting really, really clear about what I wanted. Because there was a season in my journey, and this comes back in different shades, but there was a season where success was not what I wanted. Success was what other people wanted for me, or what other people expected, or what other people were doing. I was caught in that comparison trap. And as Teddy Roosevelt said, comparison is the thief of joy, but it's also the thief of success, because it will take your focus on the race that you're running, and you'll be looking at what everybody else is doing, and you will naturally run a slower race, a not as good race, when you're paying attention to what other people are doing. And so you've got to figure out what you want, right? What is the race that you're here to run, and how can you run that well?
I love that there's analogies where it's like running your own race, because it's true. Mm-hmm. It's when you look to the side, you slow yourself down. And then also What you mentioned about, it's like we have to graduate from being when-we's. When we get there, then I'll be happy. Right? When we get there, then I'll be, you know, and it's kind of like, well, when is when? In realizing like the whole journey, and I know it's a cliche. My teenage kids just roll their eyes at me when I tell them this, you know. Any parents of kids would know this, but it really is understanding that. And I love how you say, like, what you achieved what you wanted, and you realize that maybe wasn't it. Like, you thought that was whatever you achieved would be the biggest thing since sliced bread, and then all of a sudden you realize that's maybe not it, right?
I achieved what I thought I was supposed to want.
Mm-hmm. Based on like expectations of yourself, or what other people expected of you?
What everybody was talking about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Kind of like getting caught up with what's going on social media. Or example, someone says you've got to use this tactic, and all of a sudden you know you have to do that too. So you start chasing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fun, you know, having a 7-figure business.
Yeah.
Building funnels, having recurring revenue, all the things, what gets talked about gets done, right? And so when you're in a highly collaborative industry, I remember Michael Hyatt telling me that the world of blogging and online business, internet marketing, he said, it's an incredibly collaborative industry. Everybody wants to help you and share. And that's a really good thing. But the shadow side of that is you will naturally compare what you're doing to what other people are doing. And I had to realize that what I'm doing is not what other people are doing. Even when it looks similar, it's very different. You don't have my kids, right? You don't have my life. You don't have my body and my past. And so I'm the one who has to deal with all of this, good, bad, right, wrong. And so why am I feeling bad about not achieving what somebody else with a different set of circumstances was able to achieve? That makes no sense. But exactly. We do it all the time.
It's almost like what you think you should be like someone instead of, it's like, it comes back to the whole purpose thing, which I know my audience knows I love to harp about purpose. Like, what is your purpose? Like, figure out what you mean to do. And I have this concept come up sometimes. People say, well, I want to write a book about this idea, but there's so many other books about that. And I always say, it doesn't matter. Like, how many Italian restaurants are there? And why do we need another pizza shop inside our local zip code? Is because nobody does it like you. Nobody can tell your story like you. No one has, as you said, your backstory and your style. Like, things that we talk about or might share, we might do in a different way. So I love how that's encouraging and sort of taking it step by step. So what would you say in terms of, if somebody has this idea? So we know we love talking about writing, and know books are great legacy projects, and being able to put it in a book format is a way of not just handing it on to your grandchildren, but to help and reach other people. If someone has that idea of, how do I put the story into some sort of semblance of order, what kind of advice could you give them?
In writing or just in any form?
Yeah, well, and in terms of, like, especially when you have something to say, whether it's writing a book or creating a business or creating a product or starting a ministry.
Yeah, I think you always need to start with one. Just start talking about it. All of my books, blog posts, podcasts, conferences, courses, any sort of business, you know, or thing that I've made. Even back in the day when I did vocational ministry, I would do these like side local ministries here in Nashville. It always started with one person. Can you help one person? Back in the day, I started I just started doing this local homeless ministry, and I had friends who would come along, and we would feed this group of homeless people every Saturday morning. And it really started with like one day I was hanging out at a local park downtown in the city, and somebody asked me for some money, and I had a sandwich, and I shared my sandwich with this person. And then some more people came over, and I didn't have enough sandwich to share. And so I was like, oh, okay. If I bring more food, more people will get to eat. And I think the same thing is true with telling your story, sharing your message. Often we go, I'm going to write a blog post. I'm going to start a blog. I'm going to build an online empire so that I can get fans that will pay me to make money off of this thing so that I can someday write a book or whatever it is. And we often have this circuitous, weird route to get to where we want to go. And I think it's helpful to think about what is the direct path to get to where you want to go, right? I was talking to a coaching client the other day, and this person said, I want to start writing more. I need to write more. Oh, why do you need to write more? Because I've got to reach more people with my blog, right? And if I reach more people with my blog, then I can get more fans. And then some of those fans will want to pay me. And then I can get some of those people to hire me as a health coach. I was like, that's a lot of work to get to somebody coaching you, or you coaching somebody. And I said, do you know like people that could benefit from a health coach right now that you could reach out to? Yes. Great. Well, can you make a list of those people? Yes. Could you contact those people today and offer your services to them? Yes. Great. If you still want to write and build a blog or whatever, awesome. But like, find the shortest path to get to where you actually want to go. And don't assume that you've got to take 27 steps to get there. And so for me, writing was where I wanted to be. It was the thing that I wanted to do. I wanted to write and have people read what I wrote. And so I started a blog as a place to share it. But then whenever I would publish a new blog post, I would reach out to a handful of friends that I thought would like it. And I would say, hey, I wrote this new thing. Especially in the early days of trying to build an audience, I knew that people weren't just going to show up. And so I was very intentionally reaching out to 20 to 30 people a day, saying, hey, I wrote a new blog post. You could read it here if you'd like. If you want to get these updates, click here. And I was just like intentionally reaching out to lots of people in hopes of building a fan base. And so I really think that's marketing, that's business, that's everything. It's ministry. It's reaching one person. And yeah, if you reach one person, now you know how to reach two. Right? My friend Casey Graham talks about this a lot when it comes to building a business. He says, if you have a business with 100 clients, you don't have 100 clients. You have one client 100 times, right? Before you can get two, you have to get one. Sounds simple, but people are like, how do I reach five people? By first finding one. And if you have 100 clients, they don't want to feel like one of 100. They want to feel like you're one client, right? Your reader wants to feel like when you write a blog post or write a book, when I'm reading your book, I don't have 20 people huddled around the book with me. It's not a communal experience. It's an intimate experience. And so when you communicate your message, you have to do it in an intimate one-to-one way. People often misunderstand the internet and they think it's about one-to-many. It's not one-to-many. You and I are having a conversation with each other right now, and we as an entity are having one conversation with one other person right now. And that may happen 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 times, but it is in their ears right now and nobody else's ears as they experience it. And so when you think about your message, your art, whatever it is, as that, as one direct communication line with the person that it's intended for, you do better, more sincere, intentional work.
Yeah, because you're thinking of that individual person, like I'd say to some of my clients, think about you sitting on the coffee table having coffee chat with a friend. That's what it is. Like today, that's what we're doing. We're basically chatting in real time, even though we're recording this. And we're able to have that interaction knowing that it's one person, one set of eyeballs who's looking at what we're doing. And I love how you said that, you know, it doesn't have to be about this one to many, which I think the internet and the online business world has gone crazy, making you think that if you don't have 1,000 followers or a bigger business that you're failing, but it is, it's intentional step by step by step. So I do really love that. So if you had to kind of wrap it up, what would be some one takeaway tip you would give them to say to go do today?
Find Make a list of 100 people that need what you have and reach out to all of them.
Kind of just individually, hey, would you help me? Yeah. It doesn't have to be fancy.
Yeah, well, not will you help me. So say you want to be a writer and you want to grow an audience of 1,000 subscribers on your blog. Write a blog post, then think of 100 people that could benefit from this blog post and email 100 people saying, hey, I wrote this. If you like it, subscribe here today. Or even better, don't write the blog post and just reach out to 100 people and say, I'm starting a blog. If you'd like to follow along, it's completely free. Just reply to this message and let me know if you're in. And your goal is to get one.
Mm-hmm. You know, and to grow from there, right? The same thing with reviews. As authors, yeah. Reviews are super important when you're purchasing a book. What are other people's views on it? Mm-hmm. So getting that one person and it's like, yeah, you get your first review and you're like, oh, that's cool. So more people are reading it. And then in time it builds.
Yeah. If you can't get one, you've got to change your approach. If you reach out to 100 people and you can't get one, you're doing something wrong. So don't keep doing that. Figure out what you're doing wrong. Ask the people, if you get 100 no's, ask them why they said no, and change the approach. But if you can get one, then find more people like that. Replicate the process to get, you know, if you get one, it just doesn't magically turn into two. Now you know how to get one. So go get another one. Well, that's two. And now get another one. And that's three. And on it goes. And then eventually you can ask them to share and it can, you know, multiply like the Brady Bunch, you know? But you've got to find a way to get one. And starting with, everybody can think of 100 names, right? This is what Dunbar's number, I think is what it's called, where every human being has about 150 active relationships at any time. That's what we're capable of having. So you've got 100 names in your phone right now, or 100 friends on Facebook, or 100 people in your Rolodex, or somebody, you know, 100 names in your email reader, whatever, you know, tool you're using on your computer that you could send out individual messages, one individual message 100 times personalized to them saying, I'm starting this new thing. Are you interested?
Definitely. I mean, some great tips that got really actionable and really simple. It's almost like, what? Is that easy? Yeah, you don't need to have all these fancy software programs and funnels and techniques. I mean, yeah, that comes when you've got things to build. But to start, I think it's really great just to start with that one step and to put one foot in front of the other. So they're super encouraging.
Let me say one thing. Tools don't generate demand. They manage it. A funnel doesn't create demand for what you have. It manages it. You, the entrepreneur, you, the artist, the person who is creating the thing, making the thing, building the organization, you are the one who creates the demand. Nobody can do that for you. You have to create the demand. Then if you've got thousands of people who want what you have, then you need to find a way, a piece of technology, a tool, you hire somebody, whatever it might be, to help you manage that demand. But a tool can never generate the demand. It can only manage it.
Definitely. So great advice. We can save ourselves a lot of headaches and expensive costs by just getting the and testing it, really. It's like testing the message. Like you said, I love how you said it. You don't even have to start the blog if you've got an idea. And this is what businesses do all the time, is they go and test the idea before they go and R&D, research and development, before they go to the effort to actually create the product or the service or the course or the business, whatever that is. So totally awesome. Well, I really appreciate you sharing all your awesomeness with our audience. Tell everybody, what's the best place they can find you online and connect with you?
You can find me at my website, goinswriter.com, goinswriter.com.
Awesome. And all those great, we'll have these links as well as social media links where you can follow Jeff online. We'll have those in the show notes. So make sure whatever platform you're watching or listening on to click on that link. It'll take up all our, just to send you exactly where you need to be. But just before we wrap up, would you be able to pray with our audience just as a way of a little of encouragement?
Oh, sure. I actually have this prayer that I'm going to read, if that's okay. It's a prayer by Thomas Merton. I think it's good for anybody who feels confused. So here goes. My Lord God, I have no idea where I'm going. I do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end, nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I think I'm following your will does not mean that I'm actually doing so. But I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. And I hope I have that desire in all that I'm doing. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may know nothing about it. Therefore, will I trust you always? though, therefore will I trust you always, though I may seem to be lost in the shadow of death. I will not fear, for you are ever with me, and you will never leave me to face my perils alone. Amen.
That's awesome. It's totally from the heart. I love the idea where it's, it brings it down to just the language we understand, right? Just help me for today. Lead me where I'm meant to go. And just following your purpose and continuing to step it out, I think is really awesome. Well, if you've enjoyed what we've had to say today, make sure to share it with your friends. I'm sure you know at least one friend who could really benefit from what Jeff had to say today. So click those buttons, and whether you're on social media or you're listening online, make sure to share that. And any comments or aha moments, we love to interact with our audience and make sure we can, anything that you learned or anything that you want feedback on, we'd love to hear that. So make sure to add your comments below. And if you want more freebie resources that I only share with my newsletter community, go to mamikakuni.com. And I have a great How to Build Your Author Platform checklist. As I've launched my new book, How to Build Your Author Platform with a Purpose, we have all that information and a checklist of how you can actually put that all together. So if marketing is not your jam and you need some help, go and grab that today at mamikakuni.com. So I'm going to say thanks again, Jeff, for joining me. It's been such a delight to chat to you. I've been watching and reading your stuff for so long. It's so nice to actually hear how it all started, like, and just to know the encouragement that wherever you started is how, where we can start today and continue building from there. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Mamika. It was my pleasure.
And until next time, everyone, take care. If you want more free resources that we only share with our newsletter community, go to mamikakuni.com and sign up today. We have great resources like ebooks, inspirational screensavers, printables, and exclusive access to our community.